This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Lindsay Clancy doesn't have to prove she was out of her mind. That isn't a technicality, and it isn't a defense lawyer giving you a talking point. In Massachusetts, when a defendant raises lack of criminal responsibility, the burden doesn't move to her. It stays with the Commonwealth. Prosecutors have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she was criminally responsible on the day her three children died. Not that she did it. Nobody is arguing that. Her own attorney told the court the circumstances of what happened aren't in dispute. The state has to prove her mind was working well enough to be held to account for it, and it has to prove that to the same standard it would need for a fingerprint or a confession. 12 women and 6 men are seated in Plymouth Superior Court. Judge William Sullivan has told them this could run 2 months. So when Plymouth County Assistant District Attorney Shannon Buckingham stood up to give the state's opening statement, she wasn't decorating a story the jury already half believed. She was starting from behind, carrying a burden most people follow. Most people that are following this trial don't know that she's actually carrying. 3 weeks before her children died, Lindsay Clancy drove herself to a psychiatric hospital on New Year's Eve and checked herself in. According to the malpractice complaint later filed against her providers, she was not seen by a doctor for 3 days. She was discharged after 5 with no indication from the hospital that she was a danger to anyone. And what she built all of it on was a clock. A phone call that lasted 14 seconds is going to do the enormous amount of work in this case that the prosecution needs it to do to prove she's this evil person who is plotting. Or will it? Or will that 14-second call really not do a whole hell of a lot? There's an appointment on Lindsay Clancy's calendar the day before her children died that never came up in the state's opening at all. She sat with her psychiatrist on January 23rd of 2023, according to the civil litigation. The note from that visit records no change in her mood and quotes her saying she was desperate for something that would work quickly to get her out of the state that she was in. Desperate. 24 hours out. The state's opening doesn't go anywhere near it because they can't go anywhere near it. Because it would completely destroy their whole theory. And there's something about what a not guilty verdict actually does here that the jury may not fully understand yet. Something the Commonwealth has every reason to leave alone. This is where the state plants its flag.
Go to 3V and he's going to stop at CVS on the way there. That's when the clock starts, ladies and gentlemen. The defendant knows that Patrick has to stop at CVS, go to 3V. She knows that it's about 5 miles from their house to get to the restaurant. She knows approximately how much time she has for him to go there and come back.
That's it. That's the story of premeditation. She knew roughly how long a CVS run takes. Buckingham told the jury the clock started when Patrick Clancy walked out the door for takeout 5 miles to the restaurant. A stop on the way for a children's laxative the pediatrician had recommended that morning for a 5-year-old with a stomachache. The state's argument is that a woman who could estimate that errand was a woman in full possession of herself. The claim underneath it is also worth saying plainly because the state never says it plainly. The claim is that organization proves sanity, that a mind coming apart can't also keep time. That isn't what the clinical literature says. In fact, it's actually close to the reverse. Postpartum psychosis shows up in roughly 1 in 2 births per thousand. The depressive subtype is the most common of the three, about 41% of the cases in the research. It's also the most dangerous. Clinical sources put the rate of harm to a child in that subtype near 4.5%. Command hallucinations are a documented feature of the illness, not a story assembled afterwards by a defense team. So are delusions of control, the experience of acting under an outside force. One study of postpartum bipolar psychiatric patients found symptoms of that kind in 62% of them. None of that describes somebody who can't function. It describes somebody whose reality has been rewritten while the machinery keeps running on schedule. Which brings us back to the phone call. Patrick called from CVS. She missed it. She called back and they talked for 14 seconds. Buckingham told the jury that nothing she said in that call concerned him. 14 seconds. That's the Commonwealth's evidence of a sound mind. It's also about how long it takes to tell your husband you're fine when 4 months of professionals have been telling him you're improving. Here's the sentence the whole case is being built on.
Not a woman in the throes of psychosis on January 24th, 2023. This was a woman who acted intentionally, rationally, and swiftly to accomplish a very specific goal, to kill.
Not a woman in the throes of psychosis, intentionally, rationally, and swiftly. The state needs the jury to hear those phrases as the opposite of insanity. In Massachusetts, they aren't. The standard comes out of a 1967 decision, Commonwealth versus McHoll, which adopted the modal penal code language. A person is not criminally responsible if, as a result of mental disease or defect, they lack substantial capacity to do one of two things, either appreciate the criminality or wrongfulness of their conduct or conform their conduct to the requirements of the law. Either, not both. That one word is the case. A juror can sit through every hour of the state's evidence and believe all of it. They can conclude that Lindsay Clancy understood exactly what she was doing and understood that it was wrong. They would still be required to find her not criminally responsible if the Commonwealth can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she had the capacity to stop. A voice issuing commands doesn't really go to whether you know right from wrong. It goes to whether you can conform your conduct. That's the second door. And the state has to close both of them beyond a reasonable doubt. There's a case that gets reached for here, and it usually gets used backwards. Andrea Yates was a registered nurse in 2021. She killed her 5 children in the family home. They called police and told them, she called police and told them what she'd done. Organized from beginning to end. Her first jury convicted her. That conviction was overturned after a prosecution expert admitted he had given false testimony. And on retrial, a second jury found her not guilty by reason of insanity. She was committed to a state psychiatric hospital, and she has been in one ever since, waiving her release hearings year after year. Now, the part that matters in Plymouth County, Texas asks a single question, which is whether the defendant knew the conduct was wrong. That is the narrower, harder question. And Yates cleared it anyway. Massachusetts gives Lindsay Clancy a second door that Texas never opened for Andrea Yates. This is where the state goes after her medical record. Take a look.
To deal with her mental health issues in the worst way. She chose to manipulate her providers, seek out the quick and easy fix when she was feeling depressed and anxious. And when she didn't get what she expected, she chose an alternate route. She sought a different doctor. She changed medications after days. She disengaged from treatment when she didn't like the plan. After only 4 months in treatment, she made a choice, a deliberate and intentional decision she did not want to try anymore.
She manipulated her providers. She sought a different doctor. She changed her medications after days. She disengaged from treatment when she didn't like the plan. Every one of those describes something that actually happened, and every one of them shows up in the civil complaints as a failure by somebody other than Lindsay Clancy. She sought a different doctor. According to the lawsuits filed against her providers, she went to Women and Infants Hospital in Rhode Island and was told that their day program wasn't appropriate for her. A doctor there agreed she should come often antipsychotic. She had been prescribed. The hospital reached out to a nurse at South Shore Health who had also been prescribing for her, and the complaint alleges that outreach was actually never returned. She changed medications after days. Her attorney says she was prescribed 13 different psychiatric medications between October of 2022 and January 23, among them Klonopin, Valium, Prozac, Zoloft, and Ativan. Her husband told police she was taking as many as 4 a day and that she took them exactly as prescribed. The complaints describe polypharmacy across multiple prescribers, meaning no single doctor held the full picture of what she was on. She disengaged from treatment. On New Year's Eve of 2022, she checked herself into McLean Hospital, and the lawsuit alleges she wasn't seen by a doctor for 3 days. She asked to be discharged in time for her daughter's 5th birthday. Prosecutors have pointed out that the hospital released her without indicating she was a danger to anyone. The complaint says the hallucinations returned within a week. She wanted a quick and easy fix. Patrick Clancy went to her doctors himself and told them they were turning her into a zombie. He has since filed his own complaint for malpractice and wrongful death, arguing his children might still be alive if their mother had received adequate care. This is the father of Cora, Dawson, and Callan. He was called as the prosecution's first witness. The state does have an answer to all this, and it deserves to be taken seriously because it is the strongest thing that they had in that fairly weak opening argument. Buckingham told the jury Lindsay Clancy withheld information from her husband and from her doctors, and that the symptoms she reported didn't match how she was actually living. You can't sue a physician for missing what a patient hides. Except, underreporting isn't a wrinkle in postpartum illness. It's one of the defining features. And it's been studied for decades. A review from Massachusetts General Center for Women's Mental Health, synthesizing 32 systematic reviews, identified fear of having a child removed by protective services as the primary reason women don't disclose. In one community survey of postpartum women, 1 in 5 who had symptoms told no provider at all, and roughly half reported at least one barrier that made asking for help extremely difficult or impossible. A mother who is terrified of losing her children does not hand a clinician a complete inventory. Every practice in this country knows that. It is the entire reason routine screenings exist. Building a first-degree murder prosecution on the premise that she should have self-reported perfectly asks a jury to hold a patient to a standard the profession built safeguards around precisely because patients can't meet it. And she wasn't hiding alone. Her husband was in those rooms asking, which brings it back to that last appointment. Every provider in this chain had 4 months of chances, and the final one came 24 hours before 3 children died. A patient told her psychologist, she was desperate for something that would work fast. The note records no change in her mood. She went home desperate the day before. That appointment doesn't appear anywhere in the state's opening statement, and the prosecutor said the quiet part out loud.
Women, this is not a public debate about women's mental health and how the medical system treats women. This case is about this defendant, Lindsay Clancy.
That the Commonwealth telling 12 women in advance not to follow a threat, not to weigh it, reject it, just to agree up front that it isn't in the room. That's not part of this whole case. I mean, it's the crux of the whole case. It is in the room. It is the entire defense. Kevin Reddington stood up after her and told the same jury this case is exactly about women's health and postpartum psychosis. He has put it more bluntly in the past, saying society fails miserably at treating women with postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis. And that approach is Medicaid. A minute before that line, Buckingham said something else, and she moved right past it. She told the jury Lindsay Clancy had a means and access to mental health care that most people don't. She's right about that. Labor and delivery nurse
a Massachusetts General, one of the most respected psychiatric hospitals in the country, a short drive up the road, insurance, a husband who kept showing up and asking for help on her behalf. She had every advantage the system says you're supposed to have, and the system still sent her home with 13 prescriptions and a diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder. A psychiatrist who evaluated her at length afterward concluded she had bipolar disorder with psychosis of postpartum onset. Those findings are quoted in the civil litigation, along with her note that antidepressants can produce mania and mood instability in someone with bipolar illness. She was on Prozac. She was on Zoloft. The prosecutor offered her access to care as proof of guilt. It is the most damning sentence anybody said about the medical system that morning, and it came from the Commonwealth's table without even realizing what they're saying. Near the end of that opening, Buckingham read the jury the actual test, whether a person can appreciate the wrongfulness or criminality of the conduct, and whether they can control their actions. She said both parts out loud correctly. The arguments she actually made were these: the clock, the 14 seconds, the CVS timing, the overachiever, the strict schedules, the food planned carefully, the sleep schedule on to the minute. Every one of them goes to whether she knew what she was doing. Almost nothing in that hour goes to whether she could stop. The Commonwealth has to prove both beyond a reasonable doubt to 12 women who spent jury selection answering written questions about whether anyone in their family has been diagnosed with postpartum depression or bipolar disorder. There's one more thing that the jury will be instructed on, and it's a piece the public almost never gets right. A verdict of not guilty by reason or lack of criminal responsibility does not open a door. In Massachusetts, it sends her to a secure psychiatric facility with periodic hearings to determine whether she could ever be safely released. Lindsay Clancy is already held at Tewksbury State Hospital. She's paralyzed from the waist down. She comes to court in a wheelchair. Nobody is walking out of anything. This case never should have gone to a jury. The medical record laid out in those civil complaints a very real story. And the right venue for it is a licensing board and a courtroom where the providers sit at the defense table. Instead of the Commonwealth going and spending 2 months trying to convince 12 women that a mother who begged for help for 4 straight months was running a con, I don't think they get there. I think this one hangs. Buckingham did one thing in that opening that was exactly right, and it's the thing the rest of the hour walked away from. She started with the children. Cora had just turned 5. She loved sparkly dresses and bows in her hair. She loved princesses, and she spent the start of preschool trying to convince her teachers her name was Sophia after the character. Dawson was 3, all trucks and noise with a raspy little voice. Callan was 8 months old, and in the prosecutor's own words, always smiling. They are the reason there is a courtroom that we're talking about at all right now. Whatever those 18 people decide and however long it takes them, Corin, Dawson, and Callan were failed by every adult and every institution that was supposed to see this coming. Some of those failures will be argued in front of a jury. Most of them never will be. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Next, we're getting into the defense's opening statements. We'll watch some of that from the courtroom as well. Press subscribe so you don't miss it. It's coming up right here on the channel. We'll continue our conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.